Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Kathleen O. in California, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Monday, March 11th, 2019, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are at page 12, the sixth paragraph, The Real Significance of My Experience, and we'll be commenting on that one paragraph only. Today's readers are Robin D.Z. for the 12 Steps, Roz G. for the 12 Traditions, and the readers of our text are Marissa E., Terry C., and Susan H. The share ID for Sunday, March 10th, is 12,642, 12642. And for this morning, 7 a.m. Eastern Time, is 12,643. That's 12643. Our newcomer greeter for today is Melanie C. The OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the 12 steps and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Robin D.Z. to read the 12 steps, please.
Good morning, all. This is Robin D.Z. from South Carolina. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Step seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Step eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Step 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me serve. I pass.
And thank you, Robin D.Z. Roz G., would you read the 12 traditions, please?
Yes, good morning. This is Roz G., and here are the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should remain autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
And thank you, Roz G. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book. We're on page 12, the sixth paragraph, the real significance of my experience, and we'll be commenting on that one paragraph only. And Marissa E., if you could begin reading, please.
Thank you, Kathleen. Good morning, my fellows. This is Marissa E. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater outside Los Angeles. The real significance of my experience in the cathedral burst upon me. For a brief moment, I needed and wanted God. There had been a humble willingness to have him with me, and he came. But soon the sense of his presence had been blotted out by worldly clamors, mostly those within myself, and so it had been ever since. How blind I had been. So what we're seeing here is Bill's talking about the cathedral that he references on page 1, Winchester Cathedral, right? Much moved, I wandered outside. And I had moments, brief moments in my disease where I would look up or, you know, I binged a lot and woke up in the morning and had a sudden realization. Or, I like to walk and go out in nature and the sun would just be coming up and I'd just see this beautiful morning and I'd feel so peaceful, right? But that sense of his presence was soon blotted out, right? Because I would come down the hill and the worldly clamors mostly within myself. I didn't know this until I got entirely abstinent, but when I was younger, I don't know when, but I had made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of other people and what they thought of me. My parents, my sisters, and basically anybody and everybody, store clerks, people at the gym, people walking by, I just was always more concerned with what you thought of me than what I thought of myself or what God thought of me. And so it had been ever since. Right? Just wandering around, just worried about that and in fear that I'll be rejected and abandoned. And how blind I had been. And the references to sight right before it talks about a new world came into view, right? Scales of pride and prejudice fell from his eyes. And I feel like vision, right? Coming in and getting a guide and going through this book. I feel like I had glasses, right? And they were all dirty. They're just so dirty with all these worldly clamors. And you guys gave me the strength and the willingness and the power, right, to wipe them off, right? And now I can see things clearly and that Now I've made a decision to turn my will and my life to the care of God. And it's a new world has come into view. So I'm really grateful for that. And with that, I will pass. Thank you, Kathleen.
And thank you, Marissa. Okay, we're on page 12, the sixth paragraph, the real significance of my experience. We're commenting on that one paragraph only. And who else would like to share on that paragraph?
Terry C.
Terry C.
Beatrice O.
Julie E.B.
Beatrice O. Julie E.B.
Bruce E.
Bruce E.
Sivia V.G.
Was it Vivia?
Sivia with an S.
Oh, Sivia. And what was the initial Sivia?
V.G.
V.G. Okay. And take another name.
Mag C.
Mag C. Okay, let's stop there. So I have Carrie C, Beatrice O, Julie E.B., Bruce E., Steve B.G., and Mag C. So go ahead, Carrie C.
Thanks, Kathleen. I'm grateful to share this morning. And Terry C., a recovered compulsive overeater in New Jersey. And when I read about his presence being blotted out by worldly clamors, mostly within myself, I can't help but thinking about page 55, because it reminds me of my agnostic thinking. Deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God, but it may be obscured by calamity, may be blocked by pomp, which is self-importance, and by worship of other things, but in some form or other, it is there. And I think about the fact that there have been moments in my life, many before my recovery, where God showed up, sometimes when I prayed for him and sometimes just because I knew he was carrying me. And then the self-importance and, you know, the people, places, and things that I was obsessed with, including food, just blotted him out. And I'm so grateful for those moments that they happened, and I'm so grateful that when they happen today, I get to experience them fully and not dismiss them. And I know that God was there the whole time. There were many times in my life when I thought he abandoned me, many times when I thought he wasn't real. And now I know he was always there. See, I was always interpreting him as the bad part that showed up, the wrath of God. I was more believable, I believed more in that than I did the compassion and love of God. Today I know that he's there with his love and compassion, never leaving, not showing up, never needing to show up because he never left, he never leaves. So how blind I had been, amazing grace, you know, how sweet the sound. Was blind, but now I see. So I'm just grateful to be sharing and grateful to be on these beautiful pages of Bill's stories, my favorite pages. And with that, I'll pass.
And thank you, Terry C. Okay, Beatrice O., you're up next, followed by Julie E.B.
Hello, is this Beatrice O.?
Yes. Go ahead, Beatrice.
Good morning, this is Beatrice O. I'm just so grateful that I'm able to feel and be abstinent with the God of my understanding. I don't think I've ever felt God's presence, and I've always felt like my suffering, why am I suffering from this addiction? Why isn't God healing me? Why? I think I just was so concerned with everything outside of me, people, places, things, this addiction, my own suffering. I couldn't see God healing me or helping me. He helped me in every other respect, but this food addiction would not go away. And even over the years, I don't think I was really abstinent. Now that I review my behavior. So I can feel, I can see, I have a whole new awareness. I'm on a different footing. So I am so grateful. So thank you. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Beatrice O. Julie E.B., you're up next, followed by Bruce E.
Hi, this is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered one day at a time in Colorado Springs. This is powerful for me. This is the whole story for me. I would have this sense of a God, but the worldly clamors that really drowned things out for me were the noise in my own head, the suffering that I went through, the times my life would take a turn that I just didn't think a God would want my life, a direction a God would want my life to turn in. And so each of these worldly clamors, sometimes it was good thing. They were good things, success, doing it myself, you know, maybe an effective diet for a little while. Maybe compliments about how I looked. They would disguise both my disease and my need for God, or things would all be seeming to work out. Worldly clamor, success, or money, or friendship, or whatever it is, and pride and my self-will, I guess, is what really latches on to the worldly clamors. And the opposite of that, the quiet of the Winchester Cathedral, the quietness my food can get, the quietness that my emotions can get, the quietness that my thinking can get by working these steps, putting down the food, getting it to get quiet, getting rid of my alcoholic foods, ingredients, behaviors, and then taking these simple program of action, just reading the book with a sponsor, going through and just clearing the decks on resentments, fears, harms, and then turning my character defects over to God. As God removes them, as I engage in a conversation between my everyday life and who I am, and seeing that I'm the problem and God loves me anyway, it's amazing. But so hold on. This is something Bill gets to. This is the end of the chapter here. So if you're suffering out there today, just, you know, put down the food, get help putting down the food, call this line, and get into this program, because it's amazing that these actions can quiet the world from the inside out, as my higher power can speak to me in a still small voice so often. Thanks for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you, Julie E.B. Bruce E., you're up next, followed by Steve C.G.
This is Bruce E. in Florida. If it gets tough to hear me, let me know. I've got some traffic in the background here. if I'm not the problem, there isn't a solution, that's for sure. I better be the problem or I don't have any solution. So, and I am absolutely certain that I am the problem. So then there is a solution. So, solution is the program, God, higher power. The real significance of my experience in the cathedral burst upon me. Well, I guess it burst upon him. That's amazing that when you have a spiritual experience and you have the significance of something spiritual burst upon you. What a mind-changing, life-changing experience. Excuse me. He remembered back from World War One when he was over there in England, and he had felt the moving of the spirit in him or around him. And same thing when I was an atheist and agnostic all my life until I was age 38. So about 8 or 10 years old, my mom would take me to church, and I would come out of there, and for an hour or two, it seemed like in the afternoon, I would feel fresh and new, and like there was a new thing. Boy, I hope you don't hear that, all that traffic in the background. Anyway, I felt like a new, you know, I felt like the spirit was moving, like there was a freshness, something was happening. And then, sure enough, you know, 10 years old, as the morning wore on or the afternoon wore on, it would go away. And I would just, you know, discount it. But I'm sure that what happened was that it was blotted out by the worldly clamors. And as I grew older, job and striving for success and business and drugs, alcohol, food, you know, all that, people, you know, how people felt about me, how I looked to other people, my ego, all those things came in and completely blotted all that out. And I didn't have anything happening for 20 years in my life. So, yeah, I'm glad to be on the line. I'm glad I'm here. Thank you, everybody. And I'll pass.
Thank you, Bruce E. So, Siva ZG, it is your turn, followed by Mag C.
Good morning, everybody. This is Sivia. Sivia, and it's VG, Victory George. And thank you so much for everybody for being here and doing service. You know, I just, when I read this, it's like after, you know, finally he realized, you know, what things meant. And, you know, I can so relate. For me, what people thought of me, how I did my job because I wanted to look wonderful, the material things that I gathered were what was important, and working this program for the past, I've been in OA for almost 10 years now, and I've been listening for about 2 years to a vision, and it's been, you know, I'm a slow learner, and for the past 6 months, I've really felt that I now take that pause with my higher power on a daily or usually multiple times daily to make sure that I'm in fit spiritual condition because things happen for me. And now that I am relying no longer on my finite self, but I'm relying on my infinite God, you know, more and more, that I find such relief, and I'm definitely becoming more willing to love others openly and completely. And so it's this cycle of having that humble willingness to just assume that I, you know, what I was saying all the time, that I have no power, I have no control, but actually having that humble willingness to have God with me all the time has really woken things up for me. And on page 68, it talks about fears and how self-reliance is what causes fears, that, you know, if I can replace that fear with faith in my higher power, then I really have seen a reduction in my anxiety. I'm sleeping well. People are just amazingly wonderful. And it's just this whole leap of faith that I needed to take. This paragraph is just so amazing to me. And I just want to thank all of you for joining me on this road to recovery and supporting me and picking me up when I trip and fall without judgment. And with that, I pass.
And thank you, Sivia VG. Sorry, I botched your name. Okay, before we take you, Meg C., just a reminder to everyone, we are on page 12, the sixth paragraph, the real significance of my experience, and we'll be taking some more names after Meg C., so go ahead, Meg C.
Hi, everybody. This is Meg C. in Denver, Colorado, and I am a grateful recovering compulsive overeater. You know, for me, this real significance of my experience in the cathedral and this the world and the inner clamors, I mean, I have so many inner clamors that can threaten to tear my soul apart. And honestly, I mostly live a safe and really lovely life, very gifted life. But it's inside that the war is that I fight versus Bill's war that he fought, but that we all fight, right? So I think the thing is that I need to find a safe and secure place in my heart and my soul to go to at 2 a.m. when I am deathly afraid, filled with shame, filled with fear, and I need to find that safe and secure place to retreat to. And I think I'm starting to glimpse, you know, yeah, I've been in program a long time. And yes, so many dysfunctional behaviors have been lifted from me with, you know, after doing step work and everything. But I think I'm starting to get this glimmer of what Bill's talking about how I wanted something inside me from the outside that allows my inner kid to just be joyful and free, even when my mind and my body are just shaking with fear and unknowing. And I mean, there's so much perfectionism in how I carry myself. I mean, I shut off my feelings. I'm afraid of people and authority. I mistrust things. I isolate when I get like that. And then I numb out. Instead of being able to retreat to a safe and secure place. So I'm thinking maybe I can find this in this entity I'm going to call Mother, Father, Spirit, this loving parent, this concept that I maybe can find of what I would think someone who wanted to protect me, someone who wanted to love me and cared about my health and cared about what I was thinking and my safety more than anything else. And I think that that's the kind of thing that I could believe in, little by little. So I want to work on that. And that's all I got. Thank you.
And thank you, Meg C. So we're on page 12, the sixth paragraph. Who else would like to share on that paragraph?
Gina R.
Gina R.
Barbara.
Barbara. What's your initial, Barbara?
Stacy K.
Okay, right before Stacy, who did we have? Was it Mo?
Mo H. Mo. Yes.
Mo H. Okay.
Right.
Leslie W.
Leslie W.
Jordan L.
Jordan L. Okay, let's stop there then. So I have Gina R., Barbara, I didn't catch your last initial, Mo H., Stacy K., Leslie W., and Jordan L. So go ahead, Gina R.
Good morning, Kathleen. Thank you so much. This is Gina R., gratefully recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And I live in Green Valley, Arizona, and certainly want to welcome the newcomer. The part that's jumping out for me is where it says, I had needed and wanted God. For so many years of my life, and I really didn't become, I would say, a believer until I was about 23. Before that, I had fits and starts with different kinds of religious traditions and spiritual practices, but nothing real consistent, and nobody really displaying or exemplifying why it was important or how it worked in their life. It was very, very scattered. But as I began to grow in my understanding, it became very clear that I didn't know the difference between what I need and what I want. And for me now, it's pretty clear that my wants were definitely running the show. I didn't want a lot of the things that were manifesting. Some of them were not at my hand, but some of them were definitely consequences of my own behavior. But at some point in my faith journey, I had come across this prayer, and I started praying it. And as we read this paragraph this morning, it just popped back into my heart and in my mind, and this is where I am now. And it says, "I am no longer my own, but yours. Put me to what you will. Rank me with whom you will. Put me to doing. Put me to suffering. Let me be employed for you or laid aside for you, exalted for you or brought low for you. Let me be full. Let me be empty. Let me have all things. Let me have nothing. I freely and wholeheartedly yield all things to your pleasure and disposal. And now, glorious and blessed God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, you are mine and I am yours. So be it. And the covenant now made on earth, let it be ratified in heaven. Amen." And how that's showing up for me today is there is this kind of miraculous intersection of needing and wanting. And when I see myself in that place where I don't want what's happening, I am much quicker to connect in and understand that everything is happening for me. Nothing is happening to me. It's my choice on how I choose to perceive it and look at it. And if I see everything happening for me, then I am right where I need to be, and I can be of service and loving presence to others. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
And thank you, Gina R. So Barbara B., you're up next, followed by Mo H. Go ahead, Barbara.
Hi, good morning. This is Barbara D., compulsive overeater. And I am so grateful for a vision for you. It gets me started this particular moment, this particular morning, and this particular reading is significant in what I'm going through today. And I've had brief moments where I needed and wanted God and stepped outside of a personality and praised God in the sanctuary joyfully, which was not my personality, but I was so moved at that time. It was surprising, and it had a change. But then worldly clamors, my thinking, can often become a disconnect. And when I get it, it's a daily action on my part to get my thinking right. And listening to the meeting is one of those actions I can take. And I had a new kitchen installed, and this morning they put in the countertop, and I saw where it didn't go with the floor that we had installed a month ago because of circumstances, and things were just not known. And that need for perfection and to get it right just almost depressed me. And I tried to meditate and read something, and I said, let me get on the phone so I can see clearly what's important. And I sat outside, and I looked at the trees and the beautiful surrounding. I have been given a blessed life, and this one situation is not going to define my whole life. And those are the worldly clamors and how blind I see. And I get the impression that this experience didn't stay with Bill, But like myself, he had to come back to it again and again, but he was able to stop drinking. Now, that might be, you know, a misinterpretation, but I think we have a spiritual awakening, but we still struggle, and God is there in all our struggles, but it's me that has to acknowledge and reach out, and that's not always easy. Thank you.
And thank you, Barbara D. So Mo H., you're up next, followed by Stacy K.
Hey, good morning, Kathleen. Thank you for your service. This is Mo H., recovered compulsive overeater in Walnut Creek, California. And thank you for all of those who shared, and welcome to the newcomers on the line. The words that jumped out at me was, for a brief moment, I had needed and wanted God. And there are those brief moments within me that happen throughout the day, and that if I am not in conscious contact with my God, my higher power, I miss them. I miss the thought. I miss the suggestion. Excuse me. I miss the pause. I miss it. And he had that brief moment right then and there. But because he wasn't in conscious contact with God at that time, then the worldly clamors came in. And the way I see those worldly clamors as temptations and torments. And I was thinking back of my youth and growing up, and weight was my constant torment. I was either, you know, on a diet or off of a diet, or gaining weight, or losing weight, or making somebody else happy. And there was no connection with God, even though I was a religious person, which meant for me, I went to church. And I did have a God in my life, but I did not feel that God the way I feel that God today in my life. And I could just close my eyes and bring that serenity into my body when something is going awry right outside my body. And this is something that's really important to me today, is to constantly be in connection with God and do things that remind me to be connected, like when I start thinking negatively, to bring in gratitudes. Or when I start feeling sorry for myself, give service. That's a big thing that really helps me get out of myself, is to think of somebody else, make a phone call, go to a meeting. So it's just a really, all of this is so helpful for me. So I appreciate everyone shares, and with that, I'll pass. Kathleen, thank you.
And thank you, Mo H. Stacy K., you're up next, followed by Leslie W. Stacy, star one to unmute, please.
I'm here, sorry. I'm Stacy. I'm a compulsive overeater. God is so amazing. I was thinking about all the different ways over the years how God has come to me, and you know, very surprising ways, right, in the places that we least expect it. But I've really come to expect God a lot, you know, and as the previous, you know, as Mo and some others have said, you know, about this pause and this practice. In the prayer, you know, I have to be conscious. I have to be conscious about it. And then when I'm not so conscious, I can still see. I can still see God working in my life in those mysterious ways. And I was just thinking about the, you know, like the steps and all the promises as we go along. And, you know, in the fifth step promise, you know, we feel the nearness of our Creator, and there's nothing like that, like one compulsive overeater talking to another, right? I get so it's just so amazing when I have that heart to heart, you know, that language of the heart, that conversation with another, another person. And, you know, so obviously working with another, there's nothing like that. It always brings me closer to God, and I always, I kind of just sense, you know, God's presence, because, you know, whether I'm listening or whether I'm, you know, speaking and trying to be helpful, either way, you know, I can just feel God's presence. And so it's pretty amazing. And then just to touch on these worldly clamors, right? It says that mostly within myself. And I find that, you know, that's that selfishness. That's me thinking, you know, of me and my agenda, running the show, you know, fear. I can drift into worry and morbid reflection, just like I was brand new sometimes. But, you know, I have these tools today, and I have these steps, you know, that I know how to, you know, get out of that. Thank you, God. Thank you, God, that there is a solution today, because it's going to happen. Just like fear and selfishness and dishonesty is going to crop up, you know, that's exactly what happened to Bill here, I think. You know, and it's easy, you know, but if it affects me, I'm going to be, you know, that's where I go, you know, will go most. If it's not really affecting me, like those worldly clamors, sometimes I can, you know, I have a lot of practice at keeping those at bay, you know, if there isn't anything that I can do about them. So, yeah, the Serenity Prayer, I'm just reminded of it as I said that. So thanks, everybody. I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you, Stacey K. Leslie W., you're up next, followed by Jordan L. Leslie, star one, please, to unmute.
And here I am. Thank you. This is Leslie W. from Tennessee, recovered today. You know, I was just thinking about, you know, this paragraph, and I remember when I first felt as an adult, when I first heard the voice of God within myself. And, you know, I'll never forget it. I was in my disease and miserable, and I had passed through the stage of begging God to help me, right? So now I didn't believe, I mean, I just stopped believing that he would actually help me with this. I remember crying one day in my bathtub, and I heard, a thought went across my brain that I know was not my own. And it said, if I count the number of hairs on your head, I certainly care about the food on your plate. And it shocked me. I'd never heard anything like that before inside of me. I mean, it's not like this, you know, God doesn't speak in a booming voice. You know, God speaks to me inside of myself, if that makes any sense. It's an internal thing. And so I knew that thought was not mine. So, you know, I began to understand, like, for me, those clamors that everybody's been talking about inside of those clamors, those things are happening inside of myself, that my fears, my disillusionment with the world, my distrust of God and of other people, whether I wanted to admit it to myself or not, all of those things were preventing me from recovery, preventing me from having a real relationship with God. I can't recover without that. I can't recover without that connection, without that relationship, without believing that there is a higher power that cares about me and about the food that I put into my plate and then put into my body. So for me, that was the shift. And even when things happen today that make me doubt that, like if I feel like all of a sudden I'm starting to fear again and those those thoughts in my head of, oh no, what if God's not going to do this? What if God's not going to do that? What if I don't, you know, get what I want? What if I'm not going to be taken care of? What if? Then I'm reminded of that moment. And I think if that hasn't happened for the newcomer out there, if that hasn't happened for you yet, yeah, thank you. It will. You just keep following this program, and that's it. Thanks.
And thank you, Leslie W. So, Jordan L., you're up next, and after Jordan, we might have time for another short share if you want to jump in at the end. So, Jordan L., go ahead, please.
Good morning. My name is Jordan L. I'm the Rocky Mountains of Colorado recovered compulsive overeater. I guess I was just I was very moved this morning by what we read from the Big Book and by all of these shares, and I was just thinking about how weird it is that someone like me is on a phone line trying to have a spiritual experience with a bunch of other compulsive overeaters. Like, that's a pretty weird thing. But anyway, I'm really grateful that I'm here this morning, that the rest of you guys are walking this path with me. And I guess I just wanted to say one thing about this idea, the real significance of my experience in this program. I guess it occurred the very first time I prayed, and it was a long time ago. It was, I don't know, probably a decade ago now. It was the very first time that I prayed, and I got this sense, overwhelming sense, almost immediately that I was right where I needed to be. There was no other thought of you should be here, you should be doing this instead, or anything like that at all. It was just like peace of mind. And that's something that I just don't remember experiencing up until that point. Besides maybe when I was eating. It used to give me a peace of mind. That's probably why I chased it with so much fervor for so long, you know? Because it was the only sense I knew. But like, the fact of the matter is, this prayer thing can bring that sense too when I am when I practice it, you know. And especially when I practice it with other people who know, who have experienced what I've experienced in the food, who have experienced the depths of the isolation that this takes us to. So anyway, I'm grateful to be on the line this morning. That's all I got.
And thank you, Jordan L. Would anyone like to take about a minute and a half share?
Reggie, oh.
Go ahead, Reggie. Thanks.
Hey, yeah, thanks, Kathleen. Thanks, everybody. Reggie, oh, gratefully recovered just outside Los Angeles today. And the worldly clamors in my head and the voice of God, you know, what that made me think is that when I, in hindsight, in retrospect, I can look back, and I have looked back over my life to see all of the ways that God has shown up in my life, and I didn't know that it was God showing up in my life, so I didn't take full advantage of it. And when I have been many years ago, when I was recovered once before, God's voice came to me with a kind of like an instruction that I would have never listened to had I not been close with God and trusted the voice, that took me on an amazing journey, one of the best in my lives that I had never dreamed of. And today, I'm just reminded that the steps are there to remove the clamor, help me remove the clamor from my head and keep it removed on a daily basis so that I can hear that voice for God that I really believe is there, like, with so much frequency. I just, when the clamors are going on, I don't recognize it, or
you know, brush it aside because I'm moving too quickly. So I just really appreciating that piece of it today, you know, that the ongoing steps are what remove the clamors to bring me that relationship so I can hear and trust and listen. And I'll pass with that.
And that was perfect timing. Thank you, Reggie O. Okay, so thank you everyone who shared this morning. A special thanks to our Team Monday, Robin DZ, Roz G, Marissa E, Terry C, and Susan H. And we are going to close the meeting with a vision for you from the Big Book, page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. So Terry C., would you please read a vision for you?
Yes, thank you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.